Idaho voters will decide in November whether the state will expand Medicaid. Secretary of State Lawrence Denny certified that the group, Idahoans for Healthcare, a bipartisan grassroots effort, collected the required signatures needed to place the measure on the ballot. Supporters of the measure say it will provide coverage for up to 62,000 Idahoans who now fall into a coverage gap. They make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to qualify for subsidized health insurance through the state insurance exchange. Joining me today to talk about this issue and what it could mean for Idaho, whether it passes or whether it doesn't, our Republican Representative Christy Perry, who co-chaired the Idahoans for Healthcare, Republican Representative John Vandrewuda, and joining me on the phone is U.S. Paralympian and legislative candidate Muffy Davis. Welcome to the program, all of you.
Thank you.
So I want to
thank you so much.
You are more than welcome. I want to start with the very first question. If one of you could explain, when we say the Medicaid gap, I think sometimes, Representative Perry, people aren't familiar with what that term really means.
Sure, sure. So let me just give you a real quick rundown of that. We have a particular population within our state, and what happens is that they're working Idahoans, and they make too much to qualify for Idaho's Medicaid program, which is extremely stringent in our state, but yet they don't make enough, believe it or not, to be able to access the exchange and be able to get private insurance through the exchange. And so they live in basically this gap, and it's extremely difficult, if not almost impossible, for them to be able to actually access health care and everything from preventive health care to even crisis care. And so that's that group of people that we're talking about. It averages somewhere around 62 to 65,000 people currently.
And when this group got together, this Idahoans for Healthcare, they had a big task in front of them because you have a required number of signatures that not only you have to get, but they have to be certified. And they also have to come from all over the state, correct?
They do, yes. And that's actually a relatively new requirement.
Yeah.
I know Representative Vandrewuda and I were both in the legislature when that actually came through. And so the requirements in Idaho to actually get an initiative on the ballot are very difficult, much more difficult than in any other state. So you have to have a prerequisite number of signatures. They also have to be through more than half of the districts within the state. This particular effort actually was not only able to do that, but they actually even blew that out of the water. So they created, they were able to generate almost 75,000 signatures instead of the 56 that were needed. And then they actually certified in over 21 of the 35 districts instead of the 18. So that ensured that this is a grassroots effort. It also really demonstrates that it has broad support across Idaho in both urban and rural parts of Idaho.
And even though it has that support with those signatures, this has been a divisive issue, whether the state should pass this expansion or not. And even within parties, there's been a back and forth. Both of you are Republicans. Both of you
yep.
have different ideas about yep. this.
It's been an ongoing battle for the last 6 years in the state legislature. I think I was on an interim committee that looked at it. A couple years ago, we tried to come up with some type of solutions then. And then with the presidential election coming, that throws another monkey wrench into it again. And so, yeah, it's been an ongoing battle. I've had a couple of bills that I have sponsored to try to get some type of solution to it. Got it through the House. Then the Senate changed it enough that I didn't like it anymore. There were a fair number of House people still liked it. And so it's been an ongoing battle, even within the Republican Party, as much as within the state legislature. Mm-hmm. And the governors had, you know, four or five different proposals that sometimes looked pretty good to begin with. And then by the time we get down to the detail, everybody finds something wrong with it. And so it hasn't moved very fast.
And Representative Perry, why was it important for you to get behind the Idahoans for Healthcare? I mean, you were one of the co-chairs of this.
Yes, and I've actually been very supportive of trying to actually get coverage for this particular gap population. And you know, I have served on the House Health and Welfare Committee for 6 years. We've had people come into the legislature, stood in front of us, in front of a committee, and on camera and cry and say, look, I've lost my son, I lost my daughter, I lost this person. Good people, and we're losing them because they can't get health care coverage. And from my perspective, I just can't find a reason that good people should die for lack of health care when there really is something that we can do about it in this state. And I think that the people here at the grassroots level also felt the same way. And that's why this started actually with Idahoans who decided, yes, we don't want to see our friends and our family and our neighbors suffering when we don't see a reason that it should happen. So.
And Mafi, I want to bring you into the conversation because, as many people know, you are a Paralympian. You were paralyzed when you were 16 years old from an accident. You have, you know, become an Olympic gold medalist, a Paralympic gold medalist. And yet you wrote this op-ed that's in the Times News out of Twin Falls right now. And you described how fortunate that you've been because of the health care that you've received, but that but it would be different if you had not had the ability or the access to that health care. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, thank you. I have been very fortunate that I've always been able to have quality health care, not necessarily always affordable. It has been expensive at times, but that I always had coverage. And if I had not, the fact that I am able to be athletic and independent and get around is all because of my health needs. If I did not have that health coverage, I might be stuck in bed. I might not even be able to get out, and I would then for sure be a drain on our society. But that coverage enables me to be independent, enables me to get out, and enables me to be a productive member of our society.
And that makes a difference in lifestyle right there.
It makes an immense difference. I mean, I wouldn't even be able to contemplate running for state legislature if I didn't have health coverage and if I didn't have access to be able to get out and to do that.
But I might add that this is for able-bodied adults. People with disabilities are still covered under Medicaid. This group of people in the gap is for the able-bodied people that they're providing the health care for. It's not for cutting or adding people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. They are already still covered under Medicaid.
And one of the
Add that there are many people that this would fund that are veterans that have minor disabilities, minor injuries, and are not fully classified as disabled, but that are not getting coverage, that are out working and working 80 hours a week. I have a good friend here who runs a local business in Haley, Idaho, teaches our local children music, has a husband that is a veteran that has issues from being military service, has a son with special needs, had to choose last year because did not make enough money to afford insurance for all three of them. Chose to cover them because of their medical needs and found herself able-bodied in the hospital without insurance, embarrassed, frustrated, because she couldn't afford to cover all three of them and had to make a hard decision. No family should have to make those decisions.
And that's where what you're talking about, Representative Perry, about the people in that gap, is they're making decisions just like Muffy talked
and
about.
And have to be forced to make those type of decisions. And I think to her point also, when we talk about able-bodied people, we're also talking about, remember that our definition of disabled is also very stringent. And you may be an able-bodied person, but you may also suffer from a mental health issue. Many people who are in and out of our jail system are really suffering actually from either addiction or from mental health issues. And that impedes their ability to work. People who have chronic illnesses that don't qualify as being disabled, but yet severe diabetes, hypertension, these types of things that really do impact their ability to work, where if we could provide and help them access preventive care, we can put them back out into the job market. I mean, that's really what we want, and that's what they would like to do. I can give you an example of a lady here the other day who was working, didn't make a lot of money, and all of a sudden started having seizures, has no idea where these seizures have come from, why she has these seizures, can't hold the job down because of the seizures, and doesn't have access to health care. And so, you know, it's a very complex interwoven system here, and we can't just cut and dry, right? We can't just say this. So I think you have to have access. People have to have access to health care.
So, Representative Vanderwood, what would you like to see outside of this Medicaid expansion then? Do you think there's a better idea, a better solution?
I think when we look at the total cost of the program, there has to be a better solution. We're looking at possibly $400 million from the federal government to provide, and then we have to pay the 10%. I think we need to provide, and that was part of what our committee looked at, is some type of primary care to access to primary care for the group. And that was part of what one of the bills that I had proposed was to try to get some type of primary care out to the rural areas and stuff like that. Last year, I did get a bill through that provides loan repayment for doctors who work in a low service area in order to provide more primary care. The doctor shortage we still have a problem with in Idaho, and adding more people doesn't help the doctor shortage. And Medicaid doesn't pay at a very good rate, that a lot of doctors don't like it very well at that rate. And so if we're going to expand and put more people into that rate base, I think we're going to have a lot more access as far as doctors. So my main concern right now is to try to provide some type of primary care to the people in the gap.
So you want them to be covered. It is just that you don't believe this may be the best solution.
I think the cost of this one at $400 million is way too high for what? If Idaho had $400 million, would it do this program? I don't believe it would. I believe we would look at a different program, a type of primary care program or something like that, if we had to foot the whole bill. The only reason we're looking at it now is we're only footing 10% of the bill.
Would you agree with that, Representative Perry?
I think that Idaho should have always looked at this. Currently, Idaho pays a matching rate of 30%, and the federal government already pays 70% of the people that we currently cover in Medicaid. The way the law has now changed, but the law changed, 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Idaho still hasn't made any changes. The law changed 6 years ago. Idaho could have been paid 100% for the first 3 years, and then it dropped down to 90-10 in perpetuity. But Idaho didn't change or decide to do that either.
Idaho wanted their own system.
So Idaho wanted to do their own thing, which, you know, I understood. But Idaho and the legislature has been unable to do it. And that's where the people have now spoken up and said, look, then you guys go ahead and step aside. And then we want to have a voice in this, and we want to move this forward because they do want to see these people covered. I think the numbers being thrown out are excessive. I do think that we're going to get some hard numbers. These have been updated since the gap population has actually gone down. So we will be getting more solid numbers. And keep in mind, too, that we are paying for this already, right? We already have a particular Medicaid group that we do pay for. But these people who are not able to pay their medical bills, that bill is not just getting swept under the rug. Those bills are being picked up at the county level, at the state level, at a federal level. They're being paid for in our hospital bills, and they are manifesting themselves in the premiums that we're paying. So, you know, if you think you're not already paying for it, you are. But I think that this is the way to do it more effectively, efficiently, and more fiscally responsible.
We are continuing our conversation this half hour about Medicaid, specifically about Medicaid expansion being on the November ballot here in Idaho. A grassroots effort, Idahoans for Healthcare, went around the state collecting almost 60,000 signatures needed to get the initiative in front of voters. Here today to talk more about this is the campaign co-chair of Idahoans for Healthcare, Republican Representative Christy Perry, Republican Representative John Vandewoude, and joining us by telephone is legislative candidate and U.S. Paralympic gold medalist Muffy Davis. Thanks for continuing this conversation with us this hour. Muffy, I want to ask you a quick question. You wrote in your op-ed that is in the Times News today about what you call a lack of potential. There is a potential in Idaho that we are not tapping into. And what you meant was about certain people who fall into this gap. And could you talk a little bit about what you meant by that statement?
Yes, definitely. Well, there are people, and as Representative Perry said earlier, you know, there are people that have issues, whether it be medical issues that may not classify as disability, post-traumatic stress. We have veterans that have returned. We have all these different, this full gamut of people that have limitations. And because of their high cost of health insurance or not being able to afford health insurance and those conditions going untreated, they are not able to get out and join our workforce. And they are not able to be there and be productive members in our society because they are not getting the care that they needed, because whether they can't get insurance or they can't afford insurance for all different reasons. This is this potential. We have so many wonderful people in the state and so much great potential. And because of not simple basic primary care, basic level health care, they're stuck in home, at home, not able. And it is just, it's time for us to act. We, you know, the legislature has had 6 years, and we need to find a solution for Idaho families. And this is a great option. And I just really, really want to see this happen. And I'm thankful for Representative Perry and the other members of the legislature that pushed us forward for Reclaim Idaho and to get this ballot on. And now it's in the people's hands. And I really hope they realize how important this is. This is your neighbors, your friends. This is the great potential that we have in Idaho that is limited because they don't have access to this health care. And it's vital.
And even if voters approve this come November, that doesn't actually mean that this will move forward. There are other steps that have to be taken, correct?
Yeah, I believe that if this gets approved, then there's still going to have to be some type of submission to the federal government as far as whether we're going to have some waivers in it or whatever, what the Medicaid expansion is going to look like. And so I suspect that if this does get passed, it's not going to be just full-blown Medicaid expansion. I think the legislature is going to look at what waivers or what conditions we might want to go to CSS and then find out, CMS, where we can get some sideboards on it in order to make sure that the costs don't get prohibitive. And one thing, you know, you keep saying this is a grassroots effort, but there was a substantial amount of money coming out of state to start this, to kick this thing off. So it's not total grassroots that have created this campaign. There's a group in Washington, D.C. that has a lot of interest. And normally, Idahoans frown on out-of-state money coming in and trying to get stuff on the ballot or stuff like that. And apparently there hasn't been any pushback on that, but it's not totally a grassroots effort. I just want to correct a little bit on that.
I appreciate the correction. With that being said, Idahoans still sign their names to this to get it on the ballot.
Let me, if I can, if I can step in here, since I've actually been involved with the group, so I probably have a little more information here. I think John, Representative Vanderwaal, excuse me, and by the way, we happen to be very good friends.
Yeah. Just on different sides of the issue, and this happens sometimes.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, and I think, too, what it does here is it says that, I mean, you have two Republicans here who both actually have been working towards trying to find a solution. I mean, you do have to give him credit, and a number of other legislators who really have been trying to find a solution. And unfortunately, the legislature as a whole has really kind of played politics with it. And anytime something becomes political, it becomes increasingly difficult. So what happens here, though, when people come up, right? I mean, this is a people issue, clearly not a partisan issue. This is a people issue here. And when the people from Idaho come up and put this on the ballot, and if they pass it on the ballot, and it basically says, this is a group of people that we want to cover, this could have been done decades ago. Idaho has always had the option to do it. Doesn't have to have sideboards. There's no waivers involved that have to be involved here. If the legislature wants to kind of monkey around later, there are rules that the federal government has that they would have to follow. But this is a straight, we already cover these people, we simply want to expand it. And Idaho has always done that, and we've always had that ability. We actually added pregnant women to our Medicaid years later. They didn't start there. We've also added particular types of cancers that Medicaid would cover for women. So, and I kind of see a little unfairness in that. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to be, let's say, a 27-year-old young woman who no longer is on your parents' insurance and you contract breast cancer, Medicaid will help pay for your care, right? But if you happen to be a 27-year-old male who's no longer on your parents' insurance and you develop prostate cancer, our Medicaid doesn't cover that. And so there's really this inherent unfairness in the way that our system is designed in Idaho, because Idaho has always been able to add and subtract and do some different things. So that doesn't change here. What this is going to say is we're saying that's not really fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you sit there and say this person deserves it and this person doesn't? So this initiative is saying, look, we want it covered up to those people up to 138% of the poverty level, regardless of what cancer you get, regardless of what sex you are, those types of things. And I think it's very, very straightforward. If the legislature chooses to kind of monkey around with it later, then I think that's when the people need to come back and talk to their legislators. And they do, because I've been one. I would tell him to do that.
And I have a question from a listener, Mike. He says, what agency or organization is developing the current economic impact estimates if Medicaid is expanded, and when will that be done? And then he wants to know the source of the, he says 65,000 estimated of those in the gap, but I believe it's 62,000.
You know, it always kind of constantly fluctuates a little bit, because you'll have people that will go over the amount and then come back under, right? There's always that little fluctuation. So, but if I could touch base with that, answer that, or?
Well, and part of the problem is right now, people that are 100 to 139% are currently on the exchange. If we did.
And we're talking the poverty line right there when you say that number.
Of the poverty line. So that. Those people that are now on the exchange, if we did full-blown Medicaid expansion, they would all go back into Medicaid also. So the number could be substantially higher than the 62 that is currently in the gap. It might be quite a bit higher. And if you look at a lot of the other states that have done the expansion, a lot of them, they ended up with about twice as many people from what their projections were. Also, when we've looked at trying to find waivers or trying to find a different program, the federal government has told us you have to do it under certain guidelines and under a certain amount of money. But if you looked at their projection of what the money that they were going to spend, it's been way higher than that. And so maybe if you had the higher dollar value, you could come up with a better program than what the federal government is now allowing the dollar value to do.
I think there's a couple points along with that. One of them, when he talks about the 100 to 138% of people of the federal poverty level being on the exchange now, that's because the state of Idaho chose to do that, okay? Mm-hmm. And they are actually subsidizing and allowing them to be able to get on. That's kind of a waiver. And so what was said was, these people will go ahead and put on, but we're just not going to put on the rest of them. And how do you sit here and pick and choose who deserves to have health care, whether you're at 99% of the federal poverty level or 100? And that's kind of, again, that inherent unfairness of the way that Idaho's system has been operating for a long time. When we come up also to the money, when he talked about the other states, what's interesting is there have been a number of studies. The Kaiser Foundation certainly sent out a study. They've been studying these states from 2010 to 2015, and the studies really do demonstrate that up front you will experience kind of this lift and a bump in it, because people have some pent-up medical needs. So you do experience the bump up front, and then as they are being taken care of, that then subsides, and then you'll kind of get your baseline, and that's where they're going to probably remain. Studies show that the states come out positive in all areas of this, and especially in economic growth, because now you have your federal tax dollars coming back into the state. You are hiring more doctors, you're hiring more nurses, and so you're having economic activity spurred by this as well.
And also, we're one of only 18 states right now that have not done this Medicaid expansion. But what's interesting is that Idaho is joining Utah as a red state where Medicaid expansion will be put to a vote. And then Nebraska is waiting to see if everything is being verified in order for it to go to a vote.
Mm-hmm. And Montana.
And Montana. Mm-hmm. So why now? Why all of a sudden are these, you know, historically conservative states saying we need to do this, even though we had the option to do this 6 years ago?
I don't know if it's the state or certain organizations that are pushing to get that in.
Or voters.
Or voters. But I think at least Utah and Montana were honest enough to put a tax increase into their proposal, saying it is going to cost us more money. So they have proposals in both of theirs where they're going to raise taxes in order if they're going to expand Medicaid. And it's the same initiative. It's not two separate issues.
From my perspective, I think that many of these states have experienced exactly what Idaho has experienced. And again, it got political. It got politics played, and they were not able to get anywhere. And I do think that they've had the same issue. I think their people did the same thing that Idaho did. And they said, you know what, we really want our friends, our family, and our neighbors taken care of. And ultimately, it's our tax dollars. I mean, we're paying for it one way or the other with our own tax dollars, and we should have a say-so in how we want those tax dollars spent.
And you have something to say, Representative.
Yes, it's not our tax dollars. It's all borrowed money. The federal government's broke, and we're borrowing our grandkids' and our great-grandkids' money to pay for our current health care.
And that is a whole other
segment, but this is not money that's there. This is money that's being borrowed.
Well, we are going to wrap this segment up. I want to thank my guest today for joining me to talk about this issue. It is not the last time, I'm sure. Representative Christy Perry, Representative John Vanderwoude, and U.S. Paralympian and legislative candidate Muffy Davis on the phone with us today. Thank you again for talking about this. And like I said, I am sure we'll be back here in November discussing the outcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.